Tezriya Mitzorah, this is how we're going to start off. Obviously, Tezriya Mitzorah speak about the ideas of Tzaras, okay? So there's the Tzaras that we're going to really not concentrate on, the Tzaras that is more spiritual, and we're going to start this year off with that, and we're going to explain a little bit when it comes to that, and then we're going to go into the other type of Tzaras, which is the Tzaras given to non-Jews, and the Tzaras that exists out there in the world that is more of a physical type of idea that does not come because of Lashon Hara. So there really are two different types, the spiritual type and the physical type, and we're going to try to differentiate between the two. But mainly, we're going to try to start off with this. The Mashiach, the Ishbitzer, says that Shlomo Melech was not able to sit on his throne. He was not able to become king until he had learned and understood two parshios. The two parshios were, obviously, Tezriya Mitzorah. Mashiach says he had to learn these two parshios. That's all he says. He doesn't explain why. He doesn't explain where he gets it from. Nothing. He just says he had to learn these two parshios. Now, why would that be? So I think the more obvious answer, the more the assumption that you can make over here, is that you have to understand all issues of social interaction. Lashon Hara and being stingy and all those types of ideas that deal between a man and another man, those types of things, those types of issues, are things that bring a person tzaras. You get tzaras for those types of issues. So what this does, what Tezriya Mitzorah mean, is Shlomo Melech had to understand these parshas. He had to understand what was going into these parshas and what it meant to be together with another person to not get tzaras. And when he did that, then he was able to be their king. He was able to be the pure king for all of Klal Yisrael. I think that's the obvious answer behind it, but I think there might be a deeper answer as well. Chafetz Chaim asked the famous question. Many people speak Lashon Hara nowadays, and they don't get tzaras. You don't see people with tzaras nowadays. It ended by the second Beis HaMikdash. Now, what happened? Why don't we get that? That's number one. Number two, there's a pasuk in Tehillim. Shomer piv ulashono. If you watch your mouth and you watch your tongue from speaking Lashon Hara, shomer mitzaros nafsho. You'll keep yourself from pain upon your soul, and chazal darshan mitzaras nafsho. That if you don't speak Lashon Hara, then you won't get tzaras. You won't have the problem of tzaras. But the problem is that it says mitzaros nafsho. We all know that tzaras is it's something that goes on your skin. He's saying that you're not going to have anything that's tzaros nafsho. What does tzaras have to do with your nefesh? How does tzaras affect a person's soul? How does that work exactly? So there's a chidah. Says the Chafetz Chaim, there's a chidah. An onesh for Lashon Hara is given, the punishment that's given for Lashon Hara is to let you realize what you did and then do tshuva on it. During the times of the Beis HaMikdash, the man would go to the Kohanim would tell him what he had done wrong, teach him how he has to do tshuva for such a thing, and then give him mussar. It would go on the houses, then the clothing, then the person himself. He'd have warnings before he would get tzaras. That's how he'd deal with there, and then he would go and he would get do tshuva and everything would be all good. He would call out to other people to have other people daven for him. He would give his korbanos to the broken heart. That's what would happen during the times of the Beis HaMikdash, and he would be healed. But nowadays, none of this exists for us. Nowadays, we don't have a korban. We don't have kohanim that come up to us. You always have. They don't cleanse you of your soul. It's not there. It's nothing to do. So what happens is that tzaras is there. It's no longer a physical manifestation on your skin. It's a spiritual manifestation on your soul. You have a malady inside yourself that when you speak Lashon Hara, you can no longer connect to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Your davening is off. Your learning is off. Anytime you want to do tshuva, you can't feel it. You don't feel close to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's tzaras, says the Chafetz Chaim. And there's no way to get rid of it. There's no kohen to help you. There's no mussar to help you. There's no korbanos to bring. It's just automatic. You have it and it's there. There's no way to get out of it. That's why a person has to constantly work, and this sin specifically is Lashon Hara, because if you don't, you'll remain in that state forever. You'll never be able to get yourself out of it, and that's scary. So back in the day, the point of tzaras was to show us that even when we do evil and deserve punishment, it's not in our shoresh, it's not in the root of us, rather it's only on our chitzonius. But nowadays, it can affect us, it can make ourselves be affected by it, and it can do something inside us as well. It's still strange, because honestly, it is something very, very strange. What does it mean that your soul is affected by this? What does it mean? So Chafetz Chaim says an unbelievable line. We say, Tomei, Tomei, Yikra, that the person who gets tzaras, he's tameh and he has to call out loud, tameh, tameh, yikri. He has to announce to everybody.
Oh, just come in. Don't worry about it. And everybody
knows. Brian comes in.
Everybody's so right.
Okay, it's perfect for you, Brian. That's exactly why I did this. So what does it mean? So here's an unbelievable little line. Tameh, tameh, yikri means the following. The guy goes out in the street and he calls out, I am tameh, I am tameh. I spoke Lashon Hara. I am a terrible person. That's what he calls out loud. And he asks other people to daven for him. He says, everybody else daven for me. Now, it's strange. We all know that a person, when he is in trouble, his tefillah is more effective than anyone else. He's the one that's in the throes of death. He's the one that has all the issues. He should be calling out to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Why in the world by Tzaraas, and only by Tzaraas? You don't have this by anyone else. Anyone else who becomes Tameh, he calls out to everybody else. He says, Tameh, Tameh, Yikra, I am Tameh. Help me. Somebody daven for me. Why is that so? Why should that be? The answer is the following. Lashon Hara is so effective on the person. It affects your soul so badly, says the Chafetz Chaim, that not only does he not have a proper nefesh that can do what he's supposed to do, his davening is surrounded by the klipos. Demons grab onto his davening and doesn't let his tefillah go up to Shemayim, which means his tefillah means nothing. If you speak Lashon Hara and then you daven afterward to get rid of tzaraas, it won't go anywhere. They grab onto your tefillah and keep it down here. They throw it back down to the ground and say, you get nothing. That's what happens, says the Chafetz Chaim. So specifically by tzaraas, it's tameh, tameh, yikra. You have to call about and ask everyone else to daven for you, because your tefillah won't go anywhere. That's scary. That's absolutely scary. The idea behind that, and possibly that's what Shlomo Melech had to learn. Shlomo Melech had to learn Parshas Tzriya Mitzora. He had to understand what it meant to be affected in your soul. That when a person is affected in your soul, when that type of a thing happens, there's no real way to get it out. You have to ask other people for help. You're going to have to daven for other people's help. And maybe that's what Shlomo Melech was learning, that a Melech cannot rely on himself at all times. Something goes wrong, sometimes you have to ask for help from other people. And that's what Shlomo Melech had to learn over here, to show you what that was. Now let's skip around a little bit. Guys, we never do that, so you should know, my Bubby, who lives in Eretz Yisrael, may she live a very long life until 120, she teaches at the OU Center. Have you ever seen, those Torah tidbits? My Bubby's always all over the place in there. Pearl Burrow is her name, if you want to look her up. Pearl Burrow, she's all over the place, and she gives a shiur in the OU Center. She loves the Haftorahs. She's the type of person who's scary. She cries when she reads the Haftorahs. She cries. She knows all of Navi Baal Peh. She's one of those people that memorize everything. And she is unbelievable at it. Now, I don't know too many people like that. I don't know any people that are like that at all. But the Haftorahs that are mentioned in these parshas are two of the most amazing Haftorahs out there. We're going to concentrate on Mitzorah. But Tzriya is just as good. We just don't lean it this year. In Mitzorah, here's what happened. So there's a king, Yehoram. Yehoram is the king of Malchus Yisrael, the king of the kingdom of Israel. The Arameans, Aram, came to the kingdom of Israel, not the kingdom of Yehuda. Yehuda was still okay, but they came to the kingdom of Israel, surrounded the kingdom of Israel, went all the way around, sieged the city of Shomron, sieged the entire city, and wouldn't let anyone out, wouldn't let anyone in. They were starving inside the city. They were absolutely starving, and the little bit of food that they had cost crazy amounts of money. So they went, this is what the Gemara says, Yehoram brought guards to go kill Elisha. Elisha the Navi. Elisha the Talmud of Eliyahu HaNavi. They went to go kill Elisha. Why did they go to kill Elisha? Because Elisha was davening for the famine to end, and it wasn't ending. So they said, you're a fake Navi. You're a fake Navi, because a real Navi would have brought us food by now. A real Navi would have brought us down food, so it's your fault. They were blaming Elisha. They came to Elisha to kill him, and Elisha got up and said, by this time tomorrow, Ka'is Machor, at around this time tomorrow, all the barley and the wheat that you want will be the price of crazy cheap prices. Unbelievably cheap prices. You're going to have everything you want at this time tomorrow. So the guard that was with Yehoram, with the king, got up and looked at Elisha and said, if God would open up the windows of the heavens, even if he would open up the windows of the heavens, would he ever be able to do such a thing? And Elisha said, you'll see it, but you won't eat from it. You're going to see it with your own eyes, but you're not going to eat from it. You're going to die before it ever happens. The very next day, all the people were sieging the city. They were all around. All the people of Aram, they were sitting around the city. And this is where we start. There were four mitzoras outside the city, four people with leprosy outside the city. This was a physical malady of leprosy, not a spiritual malady. This was not the tzaras of the Torah. It was a tzaras that they had as a skin malady. How do we know? They were by the gate. They weren't kicked out of the camp. They weren't all the way out in the middle of the midbar. They were right outside the gate, which means in theory they could have entered if they wanted to. So it was a different malady than what's mentioned in the Torah itself, a different type of tzaras. The four mitzoras were Gehazi, the Talmud of Elisha, and his three sons. They had the tzaras that they had originally gotten from Naaman, which is a story in Haftorah's Parshas Tetzriah. And they were standing outside the city, and they said, what are we going to do? They say an unbelievable line. They say, if we go back to the city, we're going to die of hunger. If we go to the Iranian camp, then listen, if we live, we live. And if we die, we die. It was a very strange line, like obviously. But what do they mean by that? They go out to the Iranian camp, and there's no one there. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had sent a scary sound in the middle of the night, and the people, every single person in the Iranian camp, fled, started fighting each other, killed each other, and the camps were empty. Hundreds of thousands of tents were standing outside the city of Shomron, and there was nothing there, nobody there. There was like horses and camels and donkeys and food and anything they could want. All of it was sitting outside the camp, and there was no one else there. Everyone was either killed or gone. So the four mitzvahs ran into one of the tents, grabbed all the gold and the silver and everything, and took some food, ate, drank, and hid the gold. Went into another camp, started doing something. All of a sudden, one of the mitzvahs got up and said, hey, we should tell the city. They're starving in there. Let's go tell them. It's a good idea. They went in. The king didn't even believe them. The king would not believe them. The king said, this is a trick. He's trying to get us out. We can't leave. We're not going to leave. We're not going to do it. They finally sent two sentrymen to go find out, two men on horses, to go find out it was true. It was true. As we all know, it was 100% true. As they went out, they all ran out. The guard who was with Yehoram the night before, that guard was standing by the gate of the city. He was trampled by the people. He saw the food and then he died. To be Makayim Elisha's Nebuah, that he was going to see it, but he wasn't going to eat from it. That's what ended up happening. It's an awesome divide, awesome Haftorah. Absolutely awesome Haftorah. But we have a lot of questions over here. Why were they at the gates? Why weren't they inside the city? Says the Chassam Sofer, an unbelievable idea. Normally a Mitzvah is sent outside of the camp. Why? Speaking Lashon Hara attaches to yourself a crazy amount of demons. There are demons that attach themselves to you and become a part of you. The reason why we send the guy out of the camp into the desert, into the midbar, is so he can hang out with his demons by himself. Because if he's hanging out with other people, if he's hanging out with all these other people, the Jews that are around there, he's going to affect the other Jews, and those demons are going to grab onto them, and it's going to be bad for them. So he's got to be by himself, not with anybody else, so that no one else can go near him. So elsewhere, the Chassam Sofer says that these klipos make it feel like there's no room. You ever been in a room, like, let's say you're in this room right now, where you feel like you're being pressed against each other, and you can't move? It's not like it's that tight, but you just feel like there's not enough room for everybody to be. That's because of demons. That's because of demons. The demons are there, and that's really Gemara and Brachos. Duchkayu. Any time that you feel pressed in like that, it's minayuhavi. It's from them. Right. They're the ones that cause it.
The psychological effects of claustrophobia.
Yes. Yeah, 100%.
But that's what he's born with. It just
has... So there's something definitely there. Well, we're calling it a demon. I don't want to, parenthetically, and I know this is on tape, so I want to be careful. There's a sefer called Tovia HaRope. Maisa Tovia. It's an unbelievable sefer. I can't say the whole story right now, but at the end of the day, in the Maisa Tovia, it doesn't have it. But one time, I found a little thing in a used bookshop. In the back of that, Maisa Tovia had an appendix. There was something else inside there, and there was something called the Kuntres Yad HaShadim, where Tovia HaRope, he lived in the early mid-1600s, he wrote down a whole thing that when bacteria had come out and they discovered bacteria, he gave a whole treatise on how Shadim are bacteria. It is the definition of bacteria. That's what they are. They are, it's a crazy concept, but that's exactly what they are. Now, just think about that for a second. For example, you know the whole Gemara that says there are 10,000 on your right and 1,000 on your left? That makes sense if it's a little bit of bacteria. You know the Gemara says you got sick from Shadim? That's because of bacteria. Back in the day, bacteria had the ability to combine with one another and to form physical forms in front of people. Thank God they don't have that ability anymore. Bacteria doesn't have that ability and can't do that. But back in the day, these shadim had the ability to do that. That's Mycetoria ropi. So maybe that'll answer your question a little bit. In a way, that can be like an angel. I don't want to call that in a way. But that's the idea behind it. At least it's something over there. That's the idea behind what Yitzchak did with the pitch. But we don't have to talk about that. That's for something else. These four mitzorayim, the four mitzorayim that were around there that were outside of that area, were Gehazi and their children. Gehazi and his children. Their major problem was their love for money and their stinginess. That's why they went immediately to the camp, started taking money and started hiding it. That's what Gehazi was all about. That's what he did. They didn't want anyone else coming near their Rebbe Elisha. They didn't want anyone else. So whenever anybody tried to learn under Elisha, the Navi, they kicked them out. So because they wouldn't let them in the door, their punishment was to sit right outside the doors of the gates. They weren't like the people that normally spoke Lashon Hara and therefore got Saras. That's not why they were kicked out. They weren't kicked out for that idea because they didn't have that spiritual malady. They had the physical idea because they were stingy, and thus Mita Kenegan Mita, they didn't allow students to come in. They weren't allowed to go sit and learn with Elisha itself. Okay, so what did it mean what they were discussing to do? If we live, we live. If we die, we die. What kind of a line is that? And what does that mean over there? And then it says, and if we die, v'masnu sham. It says we're going to die there. What's there? What does it mean by that? Okay, so you have your thinking caps? Are you like in thinking mode? I'm going to give you four introductions. Four akdamos in order to understand this idea from the Chazam Sofer, but it's awesome. What is the worst thing that a person can get according to the Gemara? The worst punishment a person can get? To Gemara and Baba Basra, if it helps. The worst punishment. I'm sorry? Stomach ailment is a good call because of the Gemara and Baba Kama. But there's a Gemara that brings down all the terrible things that have happened to a person and said, the worst of all is X because it has all of them combined. Close. Shvi. Shvi. Being captured. Being thrown in jail is worse than all. Because anything you can think of can happen when you're captured. Any punishment you can think of can be there when a person is thrown into jail and can't get out. That's there. So number one, the worst punishment a person can have is shvi. However, shvi is only bad if they treat you like you're vermin. They treat you like you're garbage. If they don't treat you that way, then shvi doesn't happen that way. That's number one. Number two, we all know that when a Rasha dies, he automatically gets a kapara. When a Rasha passes away, when he dies, he gets a kapara. The greater, I should say, the worse his death is, the greater the kapara is. He can get an ultimate kapara if he keeps having like a worse and worse death. You don't want that, but if he gets it, then he will get a kapara. Number three, the only way a Rasha does not get the kapara is if he's a, such a big Rasha that even at death, he doesn't take back anything. He doesn't want to do tshuva and he doesn't want to listen to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. That's the worst thing that the guy can go through if he decides not to do that. Number four, by Dor HaMidbar, the generation in the desert, when they died in the desert, it says the word Shum Yamusu. They died there. The Gemara in Sanhedrin darshans about that. They died there, but they eventually went to? Take a guess. No. They died there, but they eventually went to? Olam Haba. That's what it's supposed to be. But they did go to Olam Haba. Okay? Those are the four akdamos that you need to know. We know these three, these mitzorayim, the four mitzorahs were Gehazi and his three sons. They didn't want to do tshuva. You know what? Elisha came back to Gehazi after he kicked him out, after what happened in last week's Haftorah. He kicked Gehazi out, and then he tried pulling him back. He pushed him away with his left hand, but tried pulling him in with his right. Tried getting him to come back a little bit. And Gehazi said, you already taught me that when a person goes off and takes other people with him, there's no way he can do tshuva. Said Gehazi, I'm not coming back. I'm not doing tshuva. I'm not going to do tshuva ever. Gehazi refused to do tshuva. Okay, that's there. So he said the following. If we go back to the city and we die in hunger, then we're going to get Olam Haba. Shum Yamusu. There we're going to die, but we're going to go to Olam Haba. Why? Because we'll have died with the kapara. It's a terrible death, hunger. And if you die with the kapara, with that type of kapara, then we're going to get into Olam Haba. That'll happen, and then we'll be able to go to Olam Haba. That's what Gehazi said. But we don't want that. We don't want tshuva. We don't want that to happen to us. Let's go to Machne Aram. What's bad about Machne Aram? It's bad if what? It's bad if we act as Jews, and they're going to torture us. That's bad. But if we go there and we pretend to be like them, if we go there and we live like them, that's what they're saying. If we live, we live. If we want to live like them, if we want to be like Goyim, and we want to act like them for the rest of our lives, then they'll let us live. Then they'll let us be together with them, and we'll be with them. And granted, we won't have a good case in Olam Haba. Granted, we won't get any reward, but at least we'll be able to live. And if they kill us immediately, then we're dead forever. And we won't get Olam Haba because we'll never have done tshuva before we die. Because we were going there in order to become like Gun. That's what they ended up doing, and that's what they ended up saying. Because they were so evil that they didn't want to do tshuva, they were willing to go to the Iranian camp and go over to their side and follow them for the rest of their lives, even though the alternative that if they were killed, they would be killed forever. That was the chance that they took in order to be there. Now, the last thing. The guard didn't believe the prophecy of Elisha. Why wouldn't he believe the prophecy of Elisha? What was the problem? How do you not believe when Elisha gets up and he says everything's going to happen? Elisha did Tchias Amisim twice. Twice. How many people have here done Tchias Amisim once? Ever?
Jesus.
Just one. Don't once. That's pretty good. That's two people. That's not bad. I didn't know we had that many. The amazing thing is that you have such a concept of Tchias Amisim from Elisha, and yet you have a guy who's sitting there saying, no way, you can't make the food come. It's ridiculous. How in the world can you say that? Plus, why did Yehoram want to go to Elisha in the first place? Why was Yehoram coming to Elisha? He was coming to kill him because he wasn't davening correctly. He wasn't davening correctly, and he wasn't bringing food. That meant that this guard believed that Elisha had the power to bring food. And now he's going to kill him for saying there's going to be food? What was the problem with this guy that he gets out there and says, there's no way it's going to happen. Absolutely no way. What kind of a fool was he? The problem is the following. Elisha had some inconsistencies within his nevuah. So it's this. He said that there's going to be very cheap grain. When it says very cheap grain, what does that mean? That means they're going to have to buy it. Well, there's going to be a miracle, and God is going to send down grain and give us grain. Why would he have to buy it? Why would we care what the prices are? It's going to be a crazy miracle, right? Because we're going to have all this food tomorrow and all the prices are going to go down. But why would you need to buy anything at all? That's question number one. Question number two, okay? Elisha said you're going to have wheat and barley. Barley is animal food. Why would he promise us animal food? Why is he giving us animal food? That sounds like we're not going to be good enough with wheat. We also need to get some barley, which means some people are not there. Now, granted, that's the obvious answer. But he looked at it and he said that's inconsistent. He should have just said that we're going to have enough wheat to be able to do whatever we're supposed to do. Number three, it was described as if a window was going to open in the heavens and the grain was going to come down. Why a window and not a door? A door is much bigger. You can get more through the door. So Elisha was really being asked by the guard, why is it going to be so much like that? And number four, Elisha said, at about this time tomorrow, Ka'is Machor. Anybody remember when the last time you had a chaf instead of a bezes? You said a nevuah? What? Kechatzos, kachatzos, and bichatzos. He heard that word, Ka'is Machor, around this time tomorrow, and he looked at him and said, how do you not know? How do you not know what time it's going to be at? He saw the inconsistencies and he said the following. The guard looked at Elisha and said, what is wrong with you? That's not a real nevuah. Should it be kadabar hazeh? Should it be with a chaf? Does that make any sense at all? Elisha, how do you not know when this is going to happen? How are you not positive what's going to happen? And how is it possible that we're going to have wheat and barley? We're going to have to, why are you adding on the animal food? If we have enough wheat, obviously the animals will be able to eat something. We'll deal with the animals later. But why are we dealing with animal food? What's going on here? What are you trying to give us? He couldn't believe that Elisha was saying something that was inconsistent like that. So, meaning the following. Let me be a little bit clear when I say this. The Rambam and Mori Nebuchim says the following. That when it comes to a nace that's outside of nature, that's supernatural, a crazy miracle that happens, it's given with limitations. The greatest example of that is the mun. Was there unlimited amounts of mun? No. How much was there? A handful per person. Why wasn't it unlimited? Why in the world did it not just come down in rivers, in torrents, and you could eat it all day long? Isn't that an unbelievable question? Says the Mori Nebuchim, says the Rambam, you see from there that when God gives crazy miracles, miracles that you never expect, things that are totally outside of nature, they're given in a measure. Only a certain amount is given, and that's that. If the miracle is done naturally, if it's done in a natural form, then there's unbelievable amounts. Absolutely unbelievable amounts. For example, this slug. What happened by the quail in the desert? The quail came down. Huge amounts of quail filled up the deserts, and whoever wanted could go and grab. And they took a ton of them. Remember, they took a ton of the quail, and some of them got so sick to the stomach because they ate too much of it that they died from eating too much of the quail. The man, a supernatural miracle, was given in certain amounts. But a natural miracle like the slug, giving us the slug, is given in unbelievable amounts of quantity. Says the Rambam, that's how all miracles work. Depending on if it's supernatural or natural, that's what ends up happening with these miracles, and that's the way it's going to be. That's how the Rambam makes it. So this guard, told like the Rambam, this guard was a Rambamnik, and he looked at it, and he said, hold on a second, Elisha. You said it's going to be an unbelievable miracle, and it's going to happen tomorrow. You said it's going to happen around this time tomorrow. So hold on. If it's going to be a crazy miracle, you have to know the time. You have to know the time. And if it's going to be a crazy miracle, why is it being... I can understand why it would be limited. But if it's limited, why would it be so much to the point where all the prices are going to go down? That's inconsistent, Elisha. Either it's going to be natural, and it's going to be crazy amounts of food to the point where all the prices are going to go down, or it's going to be supernatural, and we're only going to have enough, but we'll be fine with the tiny little bit that we get. It'll be like eating the lechem aponim, where you take a tiny little bit and you put it in your mouth, and you're filled for the rest of the night. It's one of the two, but it can't be both, said the guard. And Elisha looked at him and said, you're an idiot. That's in normal situations, when a Navi doesn't get up and start speaking. I'm a Navi, and I'm awesome. I'm pretty sure he said that. I'm not positive about that. And I'm awesome, and I can do anything. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to do a supernatural miracle, a crazy miracle, in a crazy way with unbelievable amounts of Shefa, he could do it. And because you deny that, you're going to die. You know what's even more amazing? The guard totally misunderstood him. It was going to be a natural miracle. When he said that the Arubos Hashemayim were going to open, that the windows of the heavens are going to open, he didn't mean that literally bread was going to come down from the sky. What happened to the Machna Aram? What happened to the Arameans? Why did they run away? Nothing. They heard like noises. They thought there was an army. And they just ran away. They fought each other and they ran away. It was a natural miracle. Nothing happened. There was no Malach that came down with a fiery chariot, that came down with a fiery sword and started killing people. Nothing like that. They got naturally scared, and they all ran away. By a natural miracle, the miracle is unlimited. So the amount that they got was a crazy amount to where the prices went down. To which Elisha said to the guy, first of all, you don't understand. You're going to see it with your eyes. You'll see with your very own eyes that it's going to be a natural miracle. But you won't be able to eat from it. Because since you didn't believe what I could do, or what HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do rather, because of that, you're not going to be zocha to partake from anything that's going to be given. That's the idea of what he's being told over here, and that's the problem with it. So let's chazer a little bit. What we went over today was there is tsaras for the soul. Tsaras for the soul means it affects you to the point where you are unable, you have an inability to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what happens nowadays since the Chafetz Chaim, and that's what Shlomo HaMelech needed to learn, that there is such a concept even nowadays of tsaras for the soul. Then afterward, we talked about the mitzoras, how evil Gehazi and those three men were, that they were kicked out of the camp because they wouldn't let anyone into Elisha, and that they themselves were very willing to go over to the other side to become non-Jews just to stay away from what the Jews were like, that they did not want to do tshuva whatsoever. The final thing we said was the guard's problem and the inconsistencies in Elisha's nevuah, and how the guard saw that and said, like the Rambam, there's no way that there could be a crazy miracle which is unlimited. To which Elisha said, you're dead now. But it was going to be a natural miracle, and the natural miracle was thus unlimited, and that was the miracle that happened for Klal Yisrael, and that's what was being prophesied. That's what Elisha was giving them. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a great Shabbat.